welcome to Mental Health Insights. My name is Craig Faust, and today we're going to be talking about self-awareness and how becoming more and more self-aware can make your life better. So there's a question that comes across my mind that kind of led to me to today's topic is, why is self-awareness so important? So for any of you that enjoy reading different business-related books or about high-performance people, you will probably find a section in that book about self-awareness. A lot of times when people are really successful in the business area, one of those reasons, or they're really productive, one of those reasons is because they have a high degree in which they are self-aware. Now, let's talk a little bit about what I mean whenever we say self-aware. Self-aware is simply being aware of some of the internal workings of your mind and how you react and how you think about things. It is how your own internal world is set up and you having an understanding of that, and that the way that your world is set up means that you will react and you will behave certain ways in certain situations because of that. So self-awareness, let me give you an example. I know about myself that if I open up my phone to Facebook and I am scrolling on my phone, Facebook, looking through the different feeds more than 5 seconds, that 5 seconds will easily turn into a minute in which I'm scrolling before I realize it. So me being aware of that and knowing that about myself, that means that I'd never take my phone out to look at Facebook unless I have more than a minute to spare in order to do that. That is a certain degree of self-awareness about myself. Now you can even go even deeper and explore, why is it that I spend this much time? And if I was to kind of pluck that thread, it could be all different reasons. Boredom, I just find different things that are interesting, or there's a shiny object syndrome, or I'm going to find that one status of gold or that one meme that's really going to lighten up my day, so I want to keep on looking until I find it and until I complete that task. But knowing those parts about myself helps me to have a little bit different behavior, whether or not it's I want to skip looking at Facebook right now because I don't want to get stuck on it, or if it's knowing that I get into this trap and I need to avoid it altogether, or else, you know, the trap will be sprung and I will be in it. So that's just one example. So self-awareness can be really, really important, and it is really important. I'm going to say that with a little bit of confidence. Self-awareness is important for all of us to have. We need to know about ourselves. And this is something that I help people all the time with in my practice. So it's important to me, and it's important with the people that I work with, and it's important for you. Because the more and more you know about yourself, it will allow for a much greater degree of freedom in your life, of happiness, of fulfillment. So let's first look at some of the obstacles, right? We talk about self-awareness, and if you want to kind of contrast self-awareness, you might look at maybe a cousin to it, which is self-centeredness, which I feel like a lot of people think about whenever they consider self-awareness. But self-centeredness is very different, where you're completely focused on yourself and your own view and how you see the world, and you don't want to give any type of consideration to anyone else. Self-awareness is actually very different because you are aware of how other people and your environment impact you and why they impact you in certain ways. So we are naturally self-centered. All of our experiences that we've had in our life happen to us. Now we can empathetically understand and we can kind of tap into other people's experience, but for a good portion of our life, and for some people most of their entire life experience, they only have their own experiences, or they will only go off their own experiences, and they will not necessarily tap into anyone else's. So there's a certain part of us that is very self-centered, inherently. And that is because we are focused on our own internal experience and how we experience the world around us. So because we are more geared towards being self-centered, that makes it hard to look at other people's perspective. It makes it hard to want to take a step into another person's shoes, right? If I know that, just to give you an example, if my own personal experience in my marriage is that my wife is lazy because she does not put her dish away, and that's, you know, that's my experience, is that she doesn't put her dish away after she's done eating, she must be lazy. Now, if I were to take a look in her shoes, if I was to kind of go outside of my self-centered scope and I was to try to put myself in her shoes, then I may start to notice that, oh, the reason she leaves her dish there is because she gets really busy chasing our son around, or she has to do this and like she just forgets about it or anything like that. I am inherently becoming less and less self-centered. It's hard to do that, right? A lot of times when we think of really little kids, they are completely self-centered because they cannot take on the perspective of someone else. And as we develop socially and cognitively, we become capable of taking on other people's perspective. But we as human beings are inherently self-centered. And this is a huge obstacle because if we only look at our view that we have of the world, then it becomes really hard to zoom out enough to understand what is going on with us. Now, what I mean by that is your entire life is just in the first person, right? You're living your life through your own experience. But if you cannot stop and kind of zoom out, so to speak, I'm doing my air quotes right now. If you cannot zoom out and look at yourself from that third person point of view and start to wonder, why did I do that? Is my perspective correct in this instance, or are there other options? We are so geared towards that self-centered part of our own experience that we actually have to practice zooming out. We have to practice what's called detachment, right? And there's definitely a healthy level of detachment, and there's a very unhealthy level. But a healthy level of it is where we consciously take this self-centeredness and we put it on pause for a moment and we zoom out and we try to look at other possibilities, other things that are kind of going on in the background, right? So let me give you an example. And this is one that you guys have probably seen before, where you are watching and listening to two people argue. And the more and more you listen to them argue, the more and more that you start to notice that the points that they are making and the, you know, the side that they are trying to argue, that both of them actually are thinking the same thing. They're both arguing on the same side, but they are so consumed in their own argument, in their own way of trying to point out and make their points be heard, and they are trying so hard that both of them are making the same argument. They're both actually on the very same side, but neither one of them realizes it. I feel like all of us have been a part of these where we've been kind of watching this happen, whether or not it is for different debates or whether or not it's for people just sitting around talking about things and people are arguing and they are both on the same side of the argument, but they are too close to the argument to actually recognize that, right? You think that the other person is not on the side. So you, being a detached person from the argument, can observe this, but the two people that are in the argument can't. They can't see it because that self-centeredness being a part of us makes it so hard to see that. So self-centered and our only, you know, having our perspective makes things really difficult for us. Another obstacle is our own internal bias, and this kind of goes hand in hand with that self-centeredness. Our internal bias is to where we look at our own perspective and we think that it's right and we think that it's just, and there are all these reasons that our own internal experience or, you know, that's incorrect, and the way that other people's may experience or think about things is incorrect. So our internal bias is to always think that the way that we're thinking or feeling is correct and right and possibly the only way. That's whenever you combine that internal bias with that self-centeredness. There are lots of people that have these types of experiences. Sometimes in our society, they're labeled as narcissists. A lot of times they're labeled as teenagers. Everyone suffers from that own, you know, their own internal bias. So that's another obstacle that we run into, is we don't ever question and wonder if the way that we're thinking about things, the way that we're considering things, may not be quite right or may not be accurate. I am thinking about a specific disorder. It's called body dysmorphia. If you look into a mirror and you suffer from body dysmorphia, you actually will not see an accurate depiction of how you look. Your brain will actually twist the picture of how you look in the mirror to make yourself look different. A lot of times for people, it's heavier, or they notice things about themselves that they don't really like. And body dysmorphia is a very tricky condition because our own perspective that we have of ourselves is incorrect. And it is a condition that people develop. Usually whenever they just notice things about themselves that they don't like, and they fixate on that and they focus on that all the time. So your own perspective becomes corrupted. There is an internal bias that is incorrect, and it's really hard to correct that. And the only way to correct it is actually going into the last obstacle that I want to talk about, is talking to others about your own experiences and being open to them. So whenever we talk to other people about our experiences, it's usually stating it as a fact. But one of the big obstacles is talking about our experience and being open to your experience or the way that you've thought about something being wrong. So being able to talk to others about your experience in such a way that you are curious about their experience too, and where you can kind of compare yours and theirs and kind of determine what is right. So, my example for this is actually going to therapy, is going to counseling. This is what we do with people all day and every day. Whenever we're meeting with them and talking with them, you are telling someone else about your experience, and they will provide you feedback. This is a very difficult thing, right? So, even for example, whenever you have someone that has anxiety, a lot of times their anxiety can be founded in, you know, it's founded in reality. It's founded in just and right things. And over time, it can become morphed and amplified, and to where it doesn't become as justified, and where it actually becomes really consuming. And talking to someone about it and saying, hey, this is my anxiety that I have. You know, it's every time that I'm getting ready to go to sleep, I have this fear that I'm never going to wake up. Well, if you look at that and you're like, you know, you're 40 years old, you've actually had quite a few nights under your belt where you've went to sleep and you have woken up. So realistically and rationally, that should not be as much of a fear. But you start to talk about it and you start to work through it to try to figure out and try to understand what's going on with you. That's a really hard thing to do. It's really hard to talk about our own internal experiences in a way where we kind of question whether or not they're correct or they're right, or there could be a different way of thinking about things. And that's the big one, is that's the big obstacle, right, is knowing and understanding that the way that I'm thinking about things may not be right and being open to them being incorrect. This is something that's really hard for people, right? We have that self-centeredness, and we have our internal bias, and directly confronting them is the part of us where we have to talk about some of our experiences and be open-minded enough to someone else telling you that, I don't know if that's quite right. I don't know if that's quite accurate. And being able to actually let that in. So the obstacle of being able to talk to people and to take their feedback into serious consideration into your perspective. Politics is a great way of pointing this out, right? Everyone has a little bit different view on different political ideas or what should be prioritized or whatever it may be. And when you talk about politics with people, it's really easy to get defensive, and it's really hard to take someone that is really entrenched politically in some idea and convince them that what they are thinking or what they're feeling may not be accurate. It may not be correct. So one of the things that I can kind of come up with off the top of my head is the anti-vaccination campaigns, where you have people that do not believe that vaccinating children is correct thing to do, and so they're called anti-vaxxers or whatever you may call them, and no matter what evidence is suggested, presented, documented, researched, and peer-reviewed, they hold an entrenched position, and it becomes really difficult, because no matter how many times you show them the error of the way that they may be thinking, they do not want to come out of their entrenched position. This is all part of these obstacles that we face for our self-centeredness, our internal bias, our difficulty talking and taking in information that may be contrary to our own experience, and feeling like maybe my experience isn't correct in this instance. Those are hard things to do, and those are really tough obstacles. But if we are working towards self-awareness and we're able to talk to other people about our own internal experiences, and we are able to have an open enough mind to understand that our experience is not the only experience, it is a practice that we do this, and something that we become better with in time. And the more and more that we do this, there are certain benefits that come from self-awareness. One of the biggest benefits that comes is a control in your own behavior. You can control the things that happen with you better. So I talked to you a little bit about my Facebook example earlier. So if I don't get on Facebook, I know that I will not get stuck in that trap. I want to talk with you guys about a different example that I think that illustrates this pretty well for me. I have a obsessive personality, or I have an obsessiveness about me, however you may want to call it. So there are some things that I've really enjoyed while growing up. One of them is playing video games, and another one is reading. So the coming out and the popularization of audiobooks and podcasts have been really difficult for me because of this obsessiveness part of me that comes up. And it's easier for me as I'm getting older to control it with video games, because I will only allow myself to play certain types of video games that I kind of know or will be harder for me to become obsessed with, right? I've learned that there are certain types of video games that are safer for me to play because I won't be thinking about them all day. I won't want to spend 8 hours a day on them or whatever. I won't get as obsessed about them. And I know that about myself over the years. I've learned that. So I just know that I have to stay away from them. But I think one of the more interesting things is what happens with me whenever I start to listen to audiobooks. I love listening to audiobooks. I love reading. I like hearing about all kinds of different stories. And even right now, I'm listening to an audiobook, and gosh, this is a long audiobook, so I can only imagine how long the actual book is, but it's over 30 hours, if memory serves. It's over 30 hours of audiobook, and I didn't realize it whenever I started listening to it. And the challenge that I get into is that I want to listen to the whole thing, and I want it to get done. And all of my free time, since it's an audiobook, I can listen to it while I'm doing other things. So I've been having this thing on the background that's been going on in my life for, it's probably been at least 2 weeks now that I've been listening to this one audiobook. And the challenge that I run into is it starts to affect other areas of my life. I'm not talking to my wife as much. I'm interacting with my son differently because I am always listening to this thing in the background. My attention is split, and there's constantly noise going around, so I know that it's affecting my thinking because I don't get to sit there and just think about things. There's always words that I'm trying to have to interpret. I'm trying to understand because I'm trying to stay, you know, up to date with the story and everything. So I know that it's starting to affect different parts of me. So I know that my obsessiveness affects different things like that, and it makes it hard for me to stop listening to the book because I just want to get done. So because of this, one of the things that I'll do, especially after this book, after I get done with it, I'm going to take a break for a little bit. And I will not go right next to, I have two books in my queue that I'm going to listen to next. And I am not going to listen to those for a little bit. I am aware enough to know that as soon as I start that, there's going to be part of me that wants to finish it. And usually what I do is I save those books for a big task that I'm going to do. So they're 8 or 10 hours, then I might be like, okay, like I'm going to spend this whole day doing this so that I can start to listen to that book. And it makes it a little bit easier for me to manage myself. It makes it a little bit easier for me to manage my own behavior because of that. So I need to not only understand this part about myself, and I can go on and on about different ways that I manage my obsessiveness, but the more and more that I understand about it and how it affects me, then the more and more that I can put things in place to start to control it and limit it. The other thing that having an increased level of self-awareness really helps with is you are able to have more compassion for yourself. So in life, many of us are our own worst critics, and we get the opportunity to see our blooper reel, all of our mistakes, all the things that we mess up on more than anyone else in our life. And this becomes really hard because we know all the internal things that are going on with us and all the things that we're messing up on. It's hard for us to have compassion for ourselves. We maybe all have compassion for other people, but it's harder to have compassion for ourselves. Now, me knowing this, let's actually go back to the obsessiveness part. Me knowing about my obsessive part helps me to have more compassion for me whenever I get sucked into these things, I get trapped, because I know how difficult it is for me to get out and how consuming this part is because I am aware of it. But not only that, so the me being able to have compassion for me is there, but also I gain the ability to have compassion for other people that share in a similar or the same struggle as me. So this compassion is goes both ways. And that's one of the most wonderful things about the human experience, is to have compassion for other people and to have compassion for yourself whenever you're in a struggling situation. It's, like I said, it's one of the greatest things about the human experience, and it's one of the greatest things about us sharing experiences together. And that is only something that you achieve through self-awareness about things that are going on with you. And the more and more self-awareness you have, the easier and easier that becomes for you to have compassion for yourself and compassion for other people. And going hand in hand with that, having compassion with other people is helping you to understand other people and the struggles that they're going through, which is something that's super important just in building great friendships, great relationships, and being able to really not get angry at people. I tell people this is one of the strangest things about becoming a therapist is you don't really get mad at people as much as you did before I chose this occupation. Because I can understand why people do the things that they do and know why they get upset or what makes them angry or anything, it makes it a lot easier for me to have compassion for them. I get it. And because I get it and because I understand it, I go to that angry place less and less often. The last thing that I think is really important for us to talk about is whenever you have more and more of a self-awareness, it allows you to differentiate what you're experiencing versus what someone else is experiencing. So the ultimate goal or the ultimate experience of empathy that you have with another person, which is another great experience that we have as humans, is to be able to pick up. We have these parts in our brain called mirror neurons where we can look at someone's face and it can give us a pretty good idea of what they're feeling if we're picking up on that. And this allows us to have empathy for them. This allows us to have empathy for other people. And the more and more aware you are of yourself, the more and more you can differentiate what you're experiencing versus what someone else is experiencing. I think the best way for me to describe this is if I am watching a movie and I can understand that, hey, everything that's happening here, it's happening in this movie. I can feel the fear, I can feel the sadness, or I can feel the hardships of the main characters or whatever it may be, or the characters in the movie. But I can also notice that while they are feeling this, I am feeling something else in my seat. So I think maybe a good example for this for a lot of people that may have seen this movies is the Marvel movies, the very last one, Endgame. In the Endgame movie, one of the things that ends up happening is the final fight scene. And during the final fight scene, you have all these characters that are preparing for this fight and the final push forward. And Captain America says, "Avengers assemble," and everything. And it's a really big moment that's built up across the entire cinematic universe of Marvel for this one moment. And whenever I am sitting there and I was watching this scene, I remember feeling a sense of, as strange as this may be, a sense of dread that all of this, all these movies, it's all about to be done. It's all about to be over. I wouldn't get to enjoy them in the same way because of this climactic moment, it's about to be done. Now, if I was looking at all the actors and all the characters in the movie, then there would be a sense of fear and apprehension, excitement, eagerness, solidarity. There would be all these different things, all these different feelings that would be getting to. But I could differentiate that what I was feeling was something very different than what they were feeling during this moment. And this is something that you get to experience all the time, right? If you're watching somebody and you can see that they're really mad, they're really upset, and you're like, I'm not angry at all. You can tell that it's them that's the one that's angry, and I'm feeling something else. The experience I'm having is totally different. So the more and more aware you are of yourself, the easier and easier it is to notice the subtle differences between the experience you're having and another person is having, and enables you to have a lot more empathy. Because if you can notice that someone else is angry, it enables you to, and you know that you're not angry, and enables you to show up for them different. It enables you to respond to them differently, right? If I don't have enough of self-awareness and I see that someone else is angry and I start to feel myself tense up and I start to feel my temperature go up, it's going up because my mirror neurons are like, hey, this is what they're feeling. It's trying to tell me. But if I don't have enough self-awareness to be like, that's what they're feeling, that's not what I'm feeling, the experience I'm having is different, then guess what? I'm going to take off and I'm going to be angry, even though, and that's going to be my new experience, even though that wasn't what I was actually experiencing. I didn't have enough ability to differentiate. That's what they're feeling. That's not what I had to feel in. So having enough self-awareness enables you to be able to look at somebody else and you can see that they're sad, they're upset. Just because they're sad, they're upset, doesn't necessarily mean that I have to be, but I can still be there for them because I understand what it's like to be sad and upset, and I want to be there for them, right? So that enables you to respond to people differently. The more and more self-awareness that you have, you can respond to people differently. You can show up to people differently. You can tell the difference between what's going on for you and what's going on for them. It helps you to control your own behavior better, and it helps you to have compassion for yourself and other people. And that's why self-awareness is so important. That's why it'll make your life better. Can you imagine being able to set up your day to help you to be more productive or to help you to feel better and to really divert yourself from any type of traps or any type of situations that you may fall into that will, you know, lead to you not feeling so great? So, for example, I know that I have enough self-awareness to know that if I eat a, you know, if I start eating the, there's these, what are they called? Sour Patch Kids. If I start eating them, I can't eat just a couple of them. I got to eat the whole box. So I know that I cannot control myself around Sour Patch Kids. So if I get them, I have to plan on eating the whole box. So it's usually easier for me just to avoid going down the aisles or the places where they're at because I want to buy it. So I'll just avoid those. So I can control my behavior from that standpoint to avoid that because I know of a pitfall that I have and I'm aware of that. I can have compassion for myself with it because I get sucked into these things just like drug addicts do with drinking or smoking or whatever it may be. And I can have compassion for other people. And I'm like, I know that other people struggle with consuming sugar all the time. And I know that it makes me feel like crap whenever I eat a ton of it. And I know that it must make them feel bad too. And I can only imagine the struggles that they must go through. And it enables me to notice what I'm feeling and not place what I'm feeling on other people and not assume that other people are feeling the same way. And not take on what other people are thinking. People that have a high degree of self-awareness, they can step into a really tough situation without it weighing them down, right? I can listen to, because I have a certain degree of self-awareness, being someone that studied this and works with this all the time, if someone is talking to you about something really tough, like let's say, something that's deeply sad or suicidal thoughts or anything like that, having self-awareness helps so that whenever they talk to you about this stuff, it doesn't necessarily stick to you. What I mean by stick to you, it doesn't, after you have the conversation, isn't something that sticks with you for days afterwards. This isn't something that you worry about all the time. If someone is talking to you about how sad you are, you aren't worried about you leaving and you being sad the rest of the day or anything like that. Or if someone's talking to you about suicide, you aren't worried that like, oh my gosh, now I'm going to have suicidal thoughts or anything. No, it helps you to understand them and to differentiate what's going on with you. It enables you to show up for people in a completely different way, enables you to help control your behavior in a completely different way. And it enables you just to, you don't have to take on the burden of everyone else. The more and more self-awareness you have, the more and more you understand your own limitations and you understand the limitations of other people and you understand what other people's loads are and you understand what are things that you can control, what things you can do. And it is a complete shift in the way that you experience things. And the more and more self-awareness you have with yourself, the more and more it makes your life better. And there's all kinds of ways of becoming more and more self-aware. So I want to take a moment or a little bit to talk about that. One of the best ways is actually just talking to people about it, getting their different experiences and having an open mind. Like I talked to you about the obstacle. It's one of the biggest obstacles. If this is something you're not good at doing, then you should probably talk to a counselor, a therapist, someone like me or many other people out there. That are good at helping people become more self-aware, understanding of their behavior and talking about kind of normal ranges and ranges that may be a little bit abnormal to help just open up your perspectives a little bit. One of the other things to do is, and I love this, so people have all kinds of different ways of becoming more self-aware. Journaling is probably one of the most unique ways that offers you to become more self-aware. You can start journaling and a year later you can go back and you can read it and you can understand where a little more about where you're at, what you're thinking about, what's going on. And it helps you to learn a little more about yourself because you aren't feeling the same things that you were at the time. You aren't in that place that you were during the time that the journal is being written. And so it enables you to understand a little more about how you're thinking, how you're feeling. Talking to your parents, just a little more about you and how you were as a kid and growing up and different things. Being curious about yourself. Why do you think things this way? Well, what's going on? Like having that openness, like I've spoken about before, is such a crucial part in helping you become more self-aware. One of the other things that and people have said that this is helpful, that there's a reason why there's certain love for personality assessments. I think some of the, you know, big ones are like the Myers-Briggs or the Strong Inventory, or I most recently took like the Enneagram or anything like that, where you can take these personality tests and they will talk to you a little bit about your own personality. Now, there's in the psychological community, there's all kinds of different theories and thoughts around personality tests, but one of the things they do help you do, despite, you know, what anyone may say, is they help raise a certain level of self-awareness about the way that you think, the way that you make choices, the way that you do things. And self-awareness is always an important factor. It's always something to consider, like, why is it that I think this way? Or what is it about my personality that makes me lean towards that? And the more and more aware of you are of those things, the more and more you can kind of keep an eye out. And you can see if you can adjust the choices, the decisions you make in certain situations to see how it is for you. It offers you a picture look at yourself. And there are so many different ones, some of the more scientifically backed ones are definitely a lot better for you to take. But personality tests are a great way for you to become a little more self-aware. So you have talking to people, whether or not they be people you know, friends or family, or whether or not they be professionals, or personality tests. One other way for you just to become a little more self-aware. And I forgot that in the journaling is another way. But one of the last ways that I want to talk to you about being a little more self-aware goes twofold. One is being really curious about yourself, being curious about the things that you do, the ways that you think about things. That's kind of an underlying theme of a lot of this. The other thing is just observing yourself, observing the thoughts you have in certain situations, or observing what it's like for you in certain scenarios. So let me give you an example. So right now, as I'm recording this, we're in the process of selling our home and purchasing another one, and it's really stressful, and you know, all these different things. One of the things that I've been able to do, or to try and experiment with, is just kind of sitting and just noticing, like, just really noticing what it's like for me whenever the stress is on me, like what it does to me. What are some of the thoughts, and like how negative they become, and like how my body is more tense, and I'm able to kind of tap into that a little bit. And because I have observed that, I consciously try to do the other thing. I try to relax, and I try to think about more of the positive things and things that are going to go right. And my mood has gotten a lot better since then. So sometimes sitting and just observing about what's going on opens you up to, how is it that I'm responding to things, and do I want to continue to do this, or do I want to change how that is? It allows you to implement it. If not, you'll kind of go into automatic default, right? Your brain will just go, and you'll just go through life just every day like you normally do, and like you're normally used to. And you don't get as many opportunities at intervention. So one of the last things, like I said, that I recommend is you just being really curious about yourself and observing the way that you're reacting to things, and you can intervene and change it if you want to. And that's just one of the examples that I've noticed in myself personally recently, was how I'm reacting to stress around the house and everything like that. And another thing that I've observed is how much I enjoy the new home, fixing up and repairing some of the things before we move in, and just the opportunity to do some of the things with my hands that I don't really get to do in my occupation, some of the lightweight things, and how much I've enjoyed doing that and how much I like doing that. And that's something that's good for me to know, because, you know, maybe I'll allow myself to have a little more opportunities to do those things with my hands that I've enjoyed, and see what that's like. It may lead to a certain amount of tinkering or a certain amount of enjoyment in different house projects that I might not have really considered before. So observing and being really curious about yourself is another way to be really, really heading in that direction towards more self-awareness. So I hope that you found this episode helpful for you. and that you can implement some of these things to help you become more self-aware too, because I know that it'll be something that helps your life, and it'll be something that you'll enjoy the process of. So I look forward to you getting to that place, and I look forward to me getting to that place as well. So thank you for listening to this episode of Mental Health Insights. If you get a chance and you know someone that maybe would enjoy this podcast too, please let them know about it so that they may be able to listen to it and learn a little more about what goes on inside of their head as well. And if you would be so kind, if you enjoyed this podcast, please rate us and review us on whatever podcast listening platform you're doing. And of course, if there's any type of topic or anything that maybe you would enjoy me talking about mental health wise, you're more than welcome to email me at Craig, C-R-A-I-G, at lifecarecounselingstl.com. Until next time, I wish you guys well. Thank you for listening to our show. This podcast is designed to provide accurate and reliable information, and those that appear on the show are all licensed professionals in the area of mental health counseling. We are in no way rendering legal or medical advice, only information to help serve you better in making decisions in your life. If you need a professional, you should find one. Music you are listening to is called Lobby Time, and that is by Kevin MacLeod and licensed through Creative Commons.